We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, how was your weekend with no game, no men's basketball game?
It was desolate and dismal. But then
you wandered around in your house not knowing what to do, where to go.
Yeah, it was bad, and I had to watch other men's ACC teams play. But then Sunday arrived, and I saw kind of a hologram type thing in the far off distance, and it turned out to be Sylvia Hatchell,
and she said, clapping.
She said, "Adam,
we're gonna rebound. We're gonna play some defense.
Defense." And then I got to watch the women's basketball team beat the number one team in the whole entire country for only the third time ever.
It was a great win by the ladies. Paris Key leading the way. I didn't see all of this game, Adam, but I did see some of it. And I swear every time I saw it, Paris Key was like either driving to the rim and laying it in or hitting a three-pointer.
As was noted on the broadcast by the astute analysis, she was balling out. That was said several times.
It's a technical term.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what that means, but I know that's what she was doing. She's good.
She is good. And, yeah, Notre Dame was without its starting point guard, so they were a little bit down in the game. But still, a tremendous win. It's been an up-and-down year for Carolina women's basketball. I think, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, I think they're better. They're closer to where they are normally, but they also haven't been as consistent as they would like. I think they're just 3-4 now, even with that win in conference play. But I think you also say, hey, if you're going to win that game, then you can win any game on your schedule and in the conference. And so, that great win for the Tar Heels. You hope they can build off of that. And congratulations, without a doubt, to Sylvia Hatchell and her squad.
I had occasion to talk to Sylvia Hatchell for something else last week, and she was saying how she felt like her team was very young, but that they were very close, and that her job, not close like tight-knit, but close like close to being a winning team. And she said her job, she felt like, was making them understand how close they were rather than them just saying, oh, we're losing, we're not very good. And so I would think if you're trying to get them to understand how close they are, beating the number one team would be pretty strong evidence in your corner.
I've said this before, but Sylvia Hatchell is about as personable as they come. And, you know, when we go out on those Tar Heel tours, she is she's the mayor just about everywhere she goes. I mean, she knows somebody. She knows somebody's daughter did this, and that person's uncle did this, and this person helped her do this at this point in time, and she's terrific at that. And so it's been a long road the last couple of years, both personally and professionally, for Sylvia Hatchell. And so I know that win had to feel good for her and for her team, And as we said, hopefully they can build off that and get back to a little bit closer to where they want to be, and that's in that top third or so of the ACC. Because I got to tell you, ACC's good. I mean, Notre Dame's very good. NC State, I think, is still undefeated. They're having a terrific season. Duke has been good. I think the Blue Devils aren't quite as good as they have been recently. Louisville's a top five team. So it is a challenging conference for sure in that sport. As far as men's basketball, Adam, kind of a quiet weekend for the Tar Heels with their bye weekend. I did get a chance to go see a little bit of practice on Friday. And the one thing that – and it was just a run-and-shoot practice, so it wasn't real technical aspect of what – you know, there wasn't a whole lot of stuff being occurring other than what it sounds like, a lot of running and shooting and just getting loose. But the one thing that really stood out to me was just how lively the practice was. And it's just it seems to be – not that this is a surprise, but this just seems to be a group that really enjoys being around each other and was having fun and kind of cutting up and, I mean, but still getting their work done, but having a good time doing it. And so it's interesting watching some of those type of practices where it was – I think they put 4 or 5 minutes on the clock. And, for an example, Luke May did his primary post move and then his secondary post move, and he did that for 5 straight minutes. And you counted to see how many you can make, and then there was competition involved in all those different things. And the perimeter guys, I think it was 3 three-pointers and 1 kind of pull-up mid-range, and you did that, and then you went back and did it again. You just kept doing that for 4 or 5 straight minutes. And so a lot of shots getting put up in this practice.
Tonight's going to be an important game.
Yeah.
Because as we saw this weekend, Georgia Tech can kind of muck it up a little bit, and Carolina has been susceptible to that in Atlanta before. You're coming off a long layoff. You've had some prosperity, and now you've got to handle it better, as you've pointed out, than the Tar Heels have already this season. It looks like the ACC is going to be relatively jumbled at the top, and it's too early to start thinking about things like double buys, but eventually those will matter. And games like tonight, a lot of times will end up being the difference, because if you drop one, maybe you shouldn't have. Well, then all of a sudden you're looking at going to Louisville. That's going to be tough. Then you're on the danger zone of losing 2 in a row, and then everybody's freaking out. So tonight, important game against what appears to be a pretty good defensive team, not so much offensive.
Yeah, 7 o'clock in Atlanta, Carolina and Georgia Tech. And the defensive numbers for Tech are really, really good. They are holding teams to below 40% shooting. They're holding teams to under 30% shooting from behind the three-point arc. They, as you mentioned, they don't score a lot of points. I think they're in the 60s, maybe the low 70s. As a team, they only have 2 guys averaging double figures, but that's not how they're choosing to play right now. Alvarado, I think, is a good point guard. He's a Georgia Tech point guard. He's from New York. He's kind of fiery. He can get to the hoop. He can create his own offense, but can also do a good job dishing to some other guys and getting other people involved. And it's going to be – I think Carolina right now, man-to-man, is better than Georgia Tech. But I also think, as we've talked about, all the things that you just said, I think there's some outside things going into tonight's game, just as you hadn't played in a while, you've been feeling good about how you played, and this is traditionally a difficult place for Carolina to go play for whatever reason. I didn't see – you saw more of the Duke-Georgia Tech game from Saturday. What did Georgia Tech do to keep that game so close for so long and have at one point an 8-point lead a couple minutes into the second half?
Duke couldn't shoot. And I don't know how much of that was Duke couldn't shoot and how much of that was Georgia Tech was playing really good defense. You just said Georgia Tech's numbers 3-point defense-wise are really good, so I'm sure they had something to do with it. But Duke just couldn't get going. But you never got the sense, even when Duke was down, that they might actually lose the game. It felt like one of those games where you're like tied at halftime and then win by 10, and that's kind of roughly what it ended up being, because they just have too much for Georgia Tech at Cameron. So it'll be interesting to see, does Georgia Tech take that as, hey, look, we can play with one of the best teams in the conference, or oh, gee whiz, we had our chance to play with one of the best teams in the conference, and we let it slip away, and now we're depressed. I don't know. So it'll be interesting to see how they respond to that.
Other ACC action this weekend, I mean, the game I saw the most of was Clemson-NC State. And Clemson did everything wrong in the last about 20 to 30 seconds of that game, and State hit shots. So certainly credit to them for coming back and winning in that regard. But, man, there were some questionable decisions and some big missed free throws. I mean, Marquise Reed was their best free throw shooter, missed four straight. And then the one that really got me, Adam, was Clemson was up three with about 9 seconds left, and Dave Odom was doing the color analyst work for the TV broadcast, and he talked about kind of during the timeout leading up to this. He said, you know, do you foul here? And he said, I think his personal preference was you do, but he said, but get some time off the clock. He said, make them work for 4 or 5 seconds before you foul. And Clemson fouled immediately. And they fouled Braxton Beverly, who I know his percentage from free throw line isn't good this year because his attempts are really low, but he's a great free throw shooter. And they fouled him within like 0.2 of a second or something. And that, to me, didn't make a whole lot of sense.
I didn't see that game, but I was listening to it on the radio, and it was like everyone was in shock that this was occurring. They had already gone into their sad, like, well, the Pack's going to have to work to come back from this mode. And then next thing you know, here comes Clemson trying everything they can possibly do to give them the game. To me, that's the biggest argument against fouling up three. Because if you play it out and just play defense, most likely the worst thing that can happen is you go into overtime. Clemson somehow managed to lose it in regulation.
Yeah, they certainly did.
And it was just, I mean, that is how you get to be Clemson basketball, losing games like that. And I don't, you know, the only person who especially seemed shocked was Reed, who fell on the ground like he was Grayson Allen trying to sell a like forearm to the face. But like that is a Clemson basketball loss. There's no way you should lose that game if you just do any one of about 10 things. And they didn't do any of the 10. None. So, yeah, that wasn't good. I also saw a lot of Virginia Tech Syracuse.
Mm.
A game in which Virginia Tech elected to wear hot pink.
Yeah.
And Syracuse wore orange.
Yeah, that was unattractive.
We should have had a conversation about that, the two teams, maybe prior to tip-off.
Yeah.
Maybe Syracuse could have brought the white. Something different could have happened. But, man, that was a different Virginia Tech team than the one Carolina saw in the Smith Center, which, as we said, Virginia Tech, very different team at the Castle than they are anywhere other than the Castle.
Yeah, I think they're a lot better at home. And Justin Robinson had an enormous game. I mean, he became the all-time assist leader for Virginia Tech, had over 20 points in the game scoring as well. And that just goes back to how important it was that he picked up fouls in the game against Carolina. And I don't know, did you see the part where they showed him going and talking to Corey Alexander before the game? And he said that if he hadn't gotten in foul trouble, they'd have won by 15. Easy, Justin Robinson.
Yeah, were you going to get 45? So that both two people who were watching that game at our house independently at separate times without knowing of the other one said, I can't believe Syracuse is 5-1 in the ACC, which now, of course, they're not anymore, but they were at that time.
Yeah, and their losses are – I mean, they've lost at home to Georgia Tech, and they lost the game to Virginia Tech. They have the win at Duke, which is probably the best win that anybody has to this point, other than maybe Louisville winning at Carolina, and I guess Duke against Virginia. But I don't – I know they've beaten Miami – I know they've beaten Pitt, maybe.
I'm not.
Well, they have the
Syracuse
exact same team.
Yes,
it's the same team.
Yes,
Brissett and Battle and Dolajai and I'm forgetting one of the really good dudes outside.
Did you say Howard?
Howard. They're very good, but they're just not real deep. And I mean, they play those guys 38 minutes a game, and they roll with it.
Well, and their win over Duke was without Jones.
Right.
Not you.
Sure.
But Trey
Jones. I was there in spirit.
Right, they're also without you. So I'm not sold on that one yet, but yeah, it was kind of nice to be able to watch ACC games and not have to be all stressed out about it because you knew somebody had to lose, which would help the Tar Heels in some way. But now it's time to get back into it.
BC beat Wake. Louisville beat Pittsburgh at home by 15. Virginia beat Notre Dame by almost 30. Big difference about Virginia is they're scoring. They've gone over 80 points, I think it's six times this year, and they had done that four times in the previous two seasons combined. So, February 11th, only matchup with the Cavaliers for the Tar Heels in the regular season. It's in Chapel Hill.
There's still tickets for that game, by the way.
That should not be the case.
No. I think it's a Monday at 7.
And those are, I get, Monday
yeah,
games.
Those are tough.
But that's a huge game.
That's a game you want to come to. I know it's painful to watch Virginia, but it's fun if they're playing the Tar Heels and the Tar Heels are playing well.
Florida State also beat Miami. Florida State and Miami have already played twice. After Georgia Tech, Carolina's next three games are Louisville, NC State, and Miami. All teams they've already played once. They haven't even come close to playing Clemson, Virginia, Florida State, Duke, Boston College. Come on. Anyway. Okay. Adam, anything else from this weekend just as far as like ACC basketball, Tar Heels? Need to give a couple shout-outs to some other Tar Heel teams. I know wrestling picked up a big win over Virginia. That's a ranked matchup between those two teams. Both tennises moved on to the ITA Indoor National Championship Tournament. I think, is it 16 teams? Only 16 teams make that event. And both the women and the men who have each won that event here in recent years, both qualified. The men did it by beating Duke. The women did it by, I think, maybe Princeton's who they beat to go on to the ITA Indoor. So congratulations to both of those programs as well for picking up wins and heading on in those respective tournaments. And then when the ITA Indoor stuff is done, then they start getting into kind of a more – regular season as they move towards the NCAA championships, which are in the spring. Okay. Adam, anything else from basketball, from the Tar Heels, from this weekend before we get to our interview?
No.
Okay. A little different interview for us. As Adam, we had the chance to sit down with Carol Folt, the outgoing chancellor of the University of North Carolina. Of course, her tenure will be done at the end of this month. And it has been a hectic couple of months for Chancellor Folt in that she's been dealing with a lot of things. Of course, she was with the Tar Heels through their NCAA process. We talked to her about that. Of course, there's all the stuff with Silent Sam, which we do. We talk a little bit about that. We don't go super deep into that. As you can imagine, that's a touchy subject at the moment for everybody involved. But we do talk a little bit about that, have her reflect back kind of on her time in Chapel Hill and her relationship with athletics as well. So let's get to that, and then Adam and I will talk about that a little bit after you listen to it. But let's get to our interview with Chancellor Carol Folt. And we're excited to have joining us now on the Carolina Insider, the Chancellor, University of North Carolina. That is Carol Folt. Chancellor, we have so much to talk about, but first of all, thanks so much for being with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I'm really looking forward to this.
You don't know what you're in for. Yeah, you can say that now, but we haven't gotten started yet.
No one's ever said that on this podcast before.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, obviously it's been a busy couple weeks. Take us through just kind of what's been going on in your life here over the last 2 or 3 weeks or so.
Well, there have been a lot of things going on. And, of course, the biggest thing for me is that I've decided that I'm going to be moving on. And at the same time, I've been so excited about what we've been doing. So I've been thinking a lot about that. But mostly what I've been doing is going around and talking to people and going and doing the same things that we do. I've been to some great games. I've been to performances. Yeah. I've been teaching in classes. So I'm really focused on that right now.
What has been... And I know, like, for example, in the Smith Center, you got a huge round of applause the other night before the Virginia Tech game. What has kind of been your interaction, the reaction, as you've gone around and done all these things since all this news broke?
Well, I think the people that I'm talking to, most of them, have been very moved by the decision that I made to remove the base mm-hmm. and take it off campus. I think they felt that that was really important, and it has put a real stop to what seemed to be a scheduled protest all the time. So the campus feels like it's the regular campus. People are going about their business. They're sure. smiling. They're doing their work. So I think people are really grateful for that. The other great thing has been that people just want to say thank you. But this is a very loving community, so they all want to come up and say thanks. Those were great things that we've done together.
I thought that was a really nice moment before the Notre Dame game. When Coach Williams came over and gave you a hug and y'all talked for a little bit, what's your relationship been like with him, and what was that moment like for you?
Well, I've gotten to know Coach Williams very well in the years that I've been here, and you know him. He's just a very caring person. He's got a huge heart. So we hit it off from the start. I've had a lot of amazing opportunities. One of my best was to sit with him when I had the chance to tell him that we were renaming the court. And he just I think we talked for an hour and a half about the people, the places, why he loves Carolina. And so I've had those sorts of relationships with him. So when he came over and gave me that hug, it was just wonderful, because I feel like I have a person I admire so much who's also a person that I care about. So,
all right, one more question about all the Silent Sam stuff, and then we'll move on. How hard of a decision was this for you? I know it's been a long process. I know there's been a lot of opinions, a lot of strong opinions. Just how difficult a decision was this for you to ultimately make?
You know, I think that as a university, and certainly I have been in my leadership team, we tried everything. We've been working so hard on it. I mean, people have really been engaged in trying to find a solution that would be permanent. When I was able to look at that and say we're not making any progress there, and I'm very concerned about public safety.
Sure.
I know we aren't going to go into all the details, but it became easy for me when I realized that there was really one thing I needed to do was ensure the public safety. So I want everyone to know that I'm quite at peace with that decision. Doesn't mean that you don't say, oh gosh, I love being at Carolina, but it was the right decision for me, and I'm at peace with it.
I was talking to Coach Hatchell recently, and she said she didn't know you as well until she sat with you at an NCAA hearing. And she said she was just absolutely blown away by kind of how you handled that and the way you led that. And I was just wondering if you could kind of, if you remember the meeting she's talking about, I'm guessing you do, and if you could kind of reflect on what that was like to have to do and how you tried to handle that.
Of course I remember it. No doubt about that. I'm a scientist in my training, and so I tend to be very methodical. I want to know the evidence. I spend time really trying to study a problem. If I talk about things and I use facts, I want to make sure they're real. You know, so in so many of these issues, a lot of it is, what are you finding out? And then once you find out you have that evidence, then you start looking at all the options. How do you get to an endpoint where you're trying to go? So for me, that was a very long process, working with lots of people. By the time we got to the hearing, I think that all of us knew everything that we had talked about, what had really been a part of that process. And so then you're there to really make sure that as it's being discussed, you're bringing forward the correct information and making sure that you're very much adhering to the truth.
I imagine when you were going to get this job, or when you applied for this job and all that, that you had kind of a picture in your head of what this was going to be like. Has it been like that? Has it been harder than you thought it was going to be? Kind of how did what reality was match up with the thoughts in your mind?
You know, Jones, I think that it's been more than I ever dreamed it could be, in very positive ways. You know, I came here really because I fell in love with the first university in America, access, affordability, opportunity. Mm-hmm. That matters to me and students. I'm a student-centered, student-focused person. And I saw Carolina doing that as well as anyone I'd ever seen. Then, as a scientist, I also had all these faculty. You know, I get to meet our Nobel Prize winners. I get to see discoveries that are unbelievable. So the things I dreamed about were even better. Hmm. And as you know, I love sports.
Sure.
So how could you not want to come to Carolina? And for me, these relationships with coaches and being out with meeting these amazing student athletes, you know, so each one of those has been great and even better. So I think mostly I look at it and say, I've been a chance to be a part of something that I really believe in. And with that comes the issues of the day. And there is no university in America that does not have issues of the day. So you don't just get the great things,
right?
You get the other things too.
I'm guessing when you're considering taking a job like this, there's a whole world out there where people kind of talk to you and say, oh, let me tell you some things about North Carolina. And you ask some people some questions. What's something about North Carolina that you think you have to actually be here on the ground to appreciate and understand about this place?
I think the joy that is the everyday feeling on campus. This is a campus that when you walk through has a real buzz. You know, I've told people that I don't need a therapist. I just go outside and talk to a student, or I go to a game and I might be cheering or I might be letting off a little bit of energy. But I do think it's that day-to-day energy that you can never capture of any campus unless you're right there. So that's one part of it. It also carries with it a friendliness and an exuberance that I really like. That's some of that Southern hospitality. Some of that is this generation, the selfie generation. That kind of happiness is really important. But the other part, I think, is this commitment to the state and to the service for the good of other people. I don't think you know that till you're right here. And then you start hearing about how people are out in the community. You see your athletes go down and work in the storm center that we put up at the Friday Center. I think every single team went. I think our cheer squad went. The band went. You start seeing that no matter who they are, they're doing service. And I really didn't understand that fully till I came here.
You mentioned that you enjoy athletics. Where did that love come from? Where did that become part of your life?
You know, I think I've just always liked it. I grew up in a family with five kids. I'm right in the middle. We watched games, my brothers, my dad in particular. But my mom was a real fan, so I think I had that. I was an athlete myself, but I didn't have the options of all the women today. I was a swimmer, and I was a coach. You know, I think coaching swimming is something that was really important for me. I think it's another reason I love athletics. And at Dartmouth, I did all the faculty leadership things, advising. Then I sat on the Division I. I was the representative from the Ivy League on the NCAA Division I Director's Board. So I just think with each job, athletics got deeper and richer for me. But in the end, I just believe in the excitement of the student athlete, and what they accomplish is truly amazing.
What is the athletic-wise Ivy League school versus a North Carolina? What are the differences and the challenges there, in your opinion, on the athletic side of things in those two type of places?
Well, I think it'd be very different if I wasn't comparing Carolina, because we have such a strong academic program. People here are able to compete for any school in the nation. So I felt like that was not the big shift. There, I had more teams at Dartmouth than I had at Carolina, but Carolina still has one of the greatest number of teams, and I love the fact that that's a real mission to have lots of involvement. We haven't tried to focus on fewer and fewer teams, kept the door open to have many different types of student athletes. So those were very similar. We didn't have the high profile in basketball and football, but Ivies are competing in Division I. But I will tell you, students, no matter where they are, want to win.
Sure.
They want to succeed. They're really very determined. And I think they also want to have the academic experiences that make them very determined. So I think in those ways, they're similar. The way faculty want their students to be in the classroom is also similar. Every faculty member wants the student to focus on their academic work. Ivies or Carolina. But I think the biggest difference is the community involvement is much greater here. It isn't just about the university, it's about the whole state. And so it fuels a very different level of engagement than it does in the Ivies.
You have to deal with adults all day, every day. But ultimately, you're kind of in charge of keeping the interests of all these students first in your mind. How do you balance the fact that you're dealing with all these adults who have their own interests, but you're trying to make sure they understand it's really for the students, and that those two things may not be the same?
You know, they aren't really separate. You know, we have two main missions at a university. It is about student center. We're training them to be successful in life and build a workforce. But we also have a discovery that we're responsible for that will advance the goals of the state and the nation. But what I look for are the ways these overlap. You know, they work together. So our faculty that are the pushing the edges, the envelopes of what is known, also have students working in their laboratories and studios. So I don't think they're really that separate. I think it becomes separate when we get out of the main academic mission. The further you get away from the academic mission, then you might see different interests. And so I think it's easy for us when it's about teaching and student learning and keeping them safe. It gets further and further away if the adults are talking about things that have left to do with our absolute mission.
When you're not running a major university, what do you like to do? Get a rest, take a nap every now and then, maybe sleep a little bit?
Not so much. I like to watch sports, play in sports. I'm a real outdoors person, so anything I can do that gets me outside, whether I'm hiking or swimming or doing anything outdoors. I'm a field biologist too, mm-hmm. so anything that has to do with that is a big deal for me.
I meant to ask you this earlier when we were talking about swimming. What was your best event swimming-wise?
My best event, I peaked at 10, was butterfly.
Really?
I was a great butterflyer for a 10-year-old. And a really good I was really good on relays, which makes
sense.
Part
of the team. That's good.
Exactly. Yeah. I always liked to be part of the team. That was my favorite.
What's the most fun you've had as chancellor?
Oh, my gosh. There's so many things. You know, I can think of many. I've had fun when I've been going, you know, to any student events, you know, so you're out there throwing color at each other, celebrating the Indian holiday, or you're out there at the dance marathon and they're in their 23rd hour and you're watching these students do that. I have had amazing fun at some of the, I think I've been around for 16 ACC championships,
wow.
4 national championships, and maybe 3 other, I mean, a lot of great events.
Yeah.
And that's been a lot of fun. It was really fun seeing the confetti come down at the national championship for basketball. But meeting and watching Aziz Sanjar as he received the Nobel Prize, that, you know, just there's just so many like that. They're just phenomenal. Probably the highlight always is graduation, though, when they come streaming out of the Kenan Center in their blue robes and their smiling faces. You know, that's kind of the tip of the iceberg.
When you ultimately have moved on to your next step and you think back at your time at Carolina, kind of two questions. What is going to be the predominant thought in your mind about your time here? And secondly, what do you think you're going to be most proud of that you were able to accomplish individually that helped the university in total?
Well, I love the fact that in the time that I've been here, we were able to do the first strategic plan mm-hmm. for the university. And what I really loved is that it fit on one page. So anyone who's ever dealt with strategic plans, even the athletics department's strategic plan does not fit on one
page. That's right.
The entire university's framework about the future is on one page. So future is something I love. I just love thinking about what's yet to come. And that strategic framework, I feel, is really wonderful because it captures the oven for the public and innovation. So those two things, I think, really are the spirit of the place. And that's how I'm always going to think about it. A place that is dedicated to service, innovation for good, and is always thinking about the future. So those are aspects of what I've been able to do that were wonderful. At the more personal level, being involved in trying to raise $1 billion for student aid. I have some really special programs, the Red, White, and Blue, a part of the Covenant. The Chancellor's Science Scholars, our work with the military, and our work on sustainability in the arts are particularly exciting to me. But, you know, I just have lists of them.
Sure.
Around the time that people are hearing this, you mentioned graduation, a whole new batch of high school seniors are, I say, opening their acceptance letters, but because I'm old, really they're like clicking a button.
That's right.
So they're finding out that they're going to be able
That's
to
right.
come to Carolina. What would you say to those kids?
You know, I'd say that they should be thinking about their future for what they think they're going to want to know in 4 years when they graduate. But the ways I sell them, or I say think about it for Carolina, is I say, if you want to be an innovator, if you want to come to a place where you're going to get pushed and challenged, because the students here are very smart and they're expected to do a lot of work. But if you think you want to get pushed and challenged, first to think things you never knew, but also to be the person that could create a job rather than just walk into a job, then you need to be here.
What Adam didn't tell you is that there's a certain case number that he's really interested in here coming up next week. So
yeah, there's one that you can just go ahead and slide it across the table. That's actually why you're here today.
But those, you know yourself, I mean, this generation is excited. They do think about the future, but we really have to get them ready for a future that is not this future. What do they say now? 3 of the 5 jobs that are going to be available mm-hmm. for them even are not even created yet. So this is a very exciting time in higher ed. We can't just do what we've always been doing. We need to create these students that are going to be doing something very different. And that, you know, that fresh look at the world that happens every year is really exciting. So students that come here get to be a part of that.
Just make sure we keep play-by-play guy, columnist. Those jobs need to stay on the table. I know that for a fact. You may not know this answer yet. Kind of what do you think a year from now is going to be going on in your life?
I don't know.
Is that scary?
Yeah, I was kidding around with some of the students saying, I feel like a senior now.
Now you get it.
And when all those people come up to him and say, what are you doing? And they go, please don't ask me anymore. I get to relate totally. I don't have that idea. You know, I am a tenured faculty here in two of the best schools in America. So teaching and doing research is something I've always loved. And I still do research. I still do publish. And so if that's where I end up in a year, that would be amazing. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know. So I'm busy doing what I'm doing now. And then I'm going to take time to really think about that after I finish here.
I think one of the coolest things about being the president of the United States, which you could maybe do that, is when the outgoing president writes the letter to the incoming president, kind of leaves it on the desk in the Oval Office. If you were going to write a letter and leave it on your desk for whoever the next chancellor might be, what would you put in there?
I'll tell a story first, and then I'll think about that. When I came, Holden had talked to me quite a bit, and I really knew him very well. But Patty Thorpe left me a box of all the various pins people had, that of every school and everyone. And she left me this little bejeweled ram that I wear. And that was so sweet of her. So that was wonderful. So I've got to find a way to do something wonderful like that. But I think I guess I would talk about the fact that it's really important to maintain that personal touch. I mean, in this university, people want to know the people that are running it. They don't want you hidden away, and they want you to be out there. You want to be part of the things that are there, but not from a distance, right in the middle of them. And so that my advice will probably be something about that.
We touched on this a little bit earlier, and Joel, I don't know how much longer we have. We're doing all right, then we're good. The balance of academics and athletics, it just continues to be a difficult balance to find, not just here, but everywhere. How, in your opinion, do we continue to take positive steps to make sure that men and women who are coming to universities to play sports are also equipped to handle what they need to equip academically and are able to find that balance?
This is really an important part of what we do. Of course, when I came here, we were just starting to go through some of the litigation associated with the NCAA. And some of the reforms and advising programs that were put in, I think, are being done better at Carolina than anywhere else. So we have a lot more focus from this time a student walks in the door that's an athlete on what do they want to be when they graduate. Maybe they'll be a professional athlete, but we all know most of them won't. So their education and their experience is going to be extremely important. So starting that early and keeping with it every term is really critical. Making sure that they aren't having to choose away from the major that they might want to be a great athlete. Mm-hmm. And we're getting a lot of partnership. That's the coaches and the athletics department working with the academic departments. I think that is critical. It's cutting edge work. I was last night watching Mia Hamm receive this wonderful award from the NCAA and listening to all of the athletes that went through. Every one of them said that their parents had said things to them like, it's great to be a great athlete at X, Y, or Z, great school. But in the end, sure, it's going to be your education that gets you through. So I think we need to continue to build on that with these advising programs that don't make people's choices be limited, but expand their choices. Athletes themselves will tell you that they do better, almost always do better academically when they're in the middle of their toughest schedule, because they tend to be very organized people. They know how to do things and keep it going. Just to get here, they have that organization. So I think that's the other thing, is to help them through those transitional times and take advantage of their capacity for organization to really help when the tough times happen academically or athletically.
Two more quick questions for me. I don't know if Adam has anything else. You have been around a lot of people who have been highly successful and different various parts of life. What do you think has made Roy Williams successful in what he does? And I know we talked about him a little bit earlier, but have you been able to pick something up that you think has allowed him to be so successful?
You know, I think Roy has incredible focus. I mean, he really thinks about it when he is working and thinking. Sure. He is so focused, and I think that's something. So he's an expert. So I guess to say he is expert on everything that happens on that basketball court. But what I've watched is his way of managing people. I mean, he builds a family every single time he builds a team. I believe that that makes a really big difference. I think you could bring, you know, 10 outstanding people together and never be successful. But when you can bring them together because they work together and they develop that kind of ethos, they believe in his capacity to teach him how to do it right, and they trust in the team to build that spirit that will support each other through the tough times. I feel like I've seen that up close and personal, and I think Roy does it beautifully.
I think everyone agrees that that's good. And you know, in sports and not in sports, everyone always says, you know, make it feel like a family and make people know that you care. But not very many people are actually able to do that. Coach Smith, I guess, was the first one, and now Coach Williams is doing it as well. How does he do it? What's the key to that?
Well, you know, I don't see him all the time with his players, but you do see him. He can be both tough and extremely affectionate, you know. But I think what they like is he's never untrue. You know, he sticks to himself. So if he doesn't think they're doing something well, he is not going to back off that. So they have I believe they can really trust him. They know that he is saying what he believes to them. And Roy lives his life that way. I mean, many of us know it, but probably others don't, that his belief in people is also how he is generous to the covenant. He helps other coaches. You know, he lives that same generosity in his own life, but he doesn't ever tell you something that he doesn't think, you know, no, even if you're the chancellor. So I love that sort of consistency of the person, and then the things that he does behind the scenes and with the students are very obvious to me. So I think it's that mixture of honesty, playfulness, and toughness.
I want to ask you about Bubba Cunningham really quickly. I know you and Bubba have worked closely together through the years. Just how has that relationship evolved as you've gone through some very difficult things with Bubba over the last couple of years?
You know, I think Bubba's amazing. I think he's the best athletic director in America. I have loved working with him. When I first came, of course, we started working together, but I also said, Bubba, I want you to be part of my central team, and that's got the provost, the deans. I want you to be part of that team that sits and talks about the entire university. Mm. And Bubba at first said, well, why? You know, you really want me there? I said, no, I do. This is a part of what we do. We need you there. So over the years, we tease him sometimes. I've called him the poet. He'll kill me for saying that here. But that's because I've heard Bubba talk about the belief in what a university does, the opportunity it brings. And he believes that. And he has that commitment to the student, the full student. And he brings that to our athletics department. And that's what our coaches say. And they say it under Bubba. And I just have immense respect for his integrity. And so we've had a great time together and can have a lot of fun.
We appreciate Chancellor Folt giving us some time for the podcast. And Adam, I thought it was an interesting interview. Just I learned a lot about Carol Folt during our conversation.
I always forget that her job is a lot different than the parts that I just see. And it's one of those things where I think you kind of think in your head like, oh, I think that'd be fun to be the chancellor and everybody have to do what you said and you get great seats at the games and everybody would be nice to you all the time. But man, that job has to do a lot of things that aren't so fun either that I think would be quite a challenge. And she touched on a few of them. But very nice of her to give us some time at that time because this is her last week on the job. She could have done anything she wanted to. So appreciate that. I thought one thing she pointed out that I thought I really hadn't considered was talking about current students. And I think she had the stat, but like 3 of the 5 jobs they're going to have don't exist yet. And so she talked about how, you know, Carolina's role is to have those students not just figure out how to get a job, but maybe how to create a job. And that's a pretty different way of thinking that I thought was impressive.
To your point about everything that role has to think about, and I may sound really dumb when I say this, but I just think you and I, and I know at least I do, and I'm guessing you do, we're so focused on the athletic side of things that I don't, like, forget that it's a functioning university and that these students – but, I mean, that's – as it should be, her and that role, that's her number one priority is what these students are doing. Of course, their safety and all those kind of things, but you know, kind of what they're doing and how they're succeeding and how they are doing against kids who go to comparable schools. And it really is amazing the level of student that there is at Carolina is incredibly high.
Yes, it is truly unbelievable. And, of course, Carolina's been in the news some for the way that's handled recently, but I think the ultimate goal is you're trying to create a student body that is representative of all parts of the state.
Yeah.
And then a little bit from out of state, but mostly all parts of the state. And that means you're going to have some just all sorts of things, and it's difficult to manage that, which is what she has to do. I tell you what I always forget about her job. I, of course, remember the athletic side. I remember the student side because we see them at the games. I always forget about dealing with the faculty.
Yeah.
I think that's tough because you're talking about people at the peak of their profession most of the time who are also some of the smartest people you ever – I'm like, you're not going to outwit them
right.
more than likely. And they all have their independent thoughts on what you can do for like their 0.1% of the university, which is the most important thing in the world to them.
Sure.
And you've got to make all those people happy. That's not easy to do.
So, again, we appreciate Chancellor Folt's time. A little different interview for us. Hope you enjoyed it. And we certainly wish her well in whatever she chooses to do in the future.
What up to Joel Curran for helping us make that happen.
Yeah, that's right. What up? Okay, Adam, do you have a list?
I do.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Boy, we've got a
That's a long list.
Well, this is two pods worth.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to conserve paper. It's the environment, gents. I did not realize what an incredible world there was of room and nursery decorating out there in the world. We mentioned it some last time because we had seen the room that it did turn out that was hand-painted Argyle.
Yep.
But it also turns out
that's mind-twisting to me.
Yes. Since then, we have received a couple tweets. One was from Alan Huffman, who said that he had to give a what up to his mom. Because in high school, Alan went on a mission trip with church and came home, and she had hand-painted Carolina stuff in his room. And Alan says she had discovered HGTV that summer and gotten inspired. Hmm. You can do anything if you watch HGTV.
I
it
know.
Doesn't seem that hard.
They always make it seem so easy.
Yeah, like, oh, we'll just take out those countertops and we'll put in some other ones. It'll be fine. What if we knock out that wall? I like it when they say they're going to open things up.
Yeah.
We're going to open things up.
We're going to knock this
wall. That means
you're
just knocking stuff down.
Yeah.
So Alan Huffman's mom opened some stuff up in his room. And then also we got a tweet from Doug Garris. This was a good idea. I predict someone will copy this, Doug. You should trademark it. Here's what Doug did.
That really is a good idea.
Before their son was born. So above the crib, the room is painted Carolina blue. And above the crib, there are baby onesies hung up as though they are the retired jerseys. And not just are they onesies, they have all the retired names and numbers on there.
Yeah.
So you've got, for example, the Phil Ford onesie above the crib. That's awesome. It's onesies in the rafters.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. I would steal that if I had any interest in having another kid, but we're actually trying to get rid of ours.
And then the last one, Doug's last name is Garris, and he's got the NC right next to the Hansbro. He's got a little onesie that just has an NC on there, and it says Garris.
Oh, I just assumed that was like Carmichael or someone without a number. Yeah, you're exactly right, because the baby hasn't picked the number yet.
Yeah. You don't want to put that on the baby.
No.
Right now.
You don't want to make choices for him.
Let the baby make that choice in the future.
Well, you wait till the baby gets older, and then you make all the choices for him and tell him that you know best.
Sure. Yeah. Look, I've done this before.
Yeah.
Look, I was once your age.
Yeah.
Baby Garris. Don't you talk to me like that, baby Garris.
Catherine Young Gala. Catherine, I don't know how to pronounce. You're always Catherine Young to me. Pointed out that the Pro Bowl now has dodgeball.
Yeah,
sort of.
Well, we got a couple people because we talked about the Pro Bowl and how lame it is.
Right.
And quick side note, congratulations, Eric Ebron, catching a touchdown in the Pro Bowl.
Yep.
But the Pro Bowl is not good. I mean, they don't even – they blow the plays dead before it tackles. And again, I understand all of it. But
there's, offensive guys playing defense, yeah, and defensive guys playing offense.
And Adam and I talked about a skills competition, and in your defense, you said, they may already have this. Yeah. I don't even know. And they do have it.
Yeah.
But they aired it on, Thursday or Wednesday or something. Yeah.
That's not Pro Bowl time.
Yeah. And that did include beach volleyball as part of the Pro Bowl skills challenge.
And there's best hands and accuracy. There's some kind of dunk tank. I didn't fully understand that.
Brian Urlacher got dunked.
But there was also dodgeball, which that seems like a good idea.
Just replace the game with that stuff.
Yeah. Or if you get picked to the Pro Bowl and you're an offensive player, maybe you should have to play defense. And if you get picked and you're a defensive player, you have to play offense. Mm-hmm. They're just normal people like us who can't throw the football. See?
This big defensive lineman can't throw the football, right?
They could all play wide receiver. You know they all want to.
It's hilarious.
Just some ideas. Okay. Big news. Somebody came sliding into our IG DMs.
Oh.
And it was Leaky.
Oh.
Choo-choo!
That is big news.
Leaky asked if we could change his favorite artist from Duh to Lil. Hmm. He's going Team Lil Baby.
That is big news.
And I told him that we would let everyone on the Leaky train know.
Yeah.
Now, I've done a lot of research on Duh and Lil.
Yeah.
And I got to say, and I know this is probably meaningful to Lil Baby because I'm in his target demographic.
Sure.
And I'm the kind of person he's trying to impress with his music.
Yep.
I like Lil Baby better than Duh Baby. Hmm. Duh Baby? A little coarse, Jones. A little coarse. Lil Baby, I feel like he's got something to say. Hmm. So, Leaky and I...
It's official.
We agree on that.
Okay.
So, everybody mark that down on your playlist.
Yep.
We're going Team Lil Baby. Okay. We did not get to fully talk about this. Perhaps this will be taken out. I don't know. You sent me an important text that I didn't get to follow up on, which was that there was a phone dropped in the toilet at your house. And I want to know, A, what happened, and B, what was the outcome? Did everyone survive?
The phone is still – it's not my phone.
Right.
The phone is still currently on rice.
Oh, it's in. Is it in the Ziploc bag of rice?
Yeah. Oh,
that'll fix everything.
So it's been a challenging weekend as semi-digital. We, found – so now I'll give the – young lady who dropped the phone in the toilet credit. She was able to get the SIM card out and has put it in an old iPhone that we had around the house and is
savvy
using it. But that iPhone, it's old and doesn't work quite right. And so she's been still somewhat on the grid, but not nearly as much as she would like to be.
Were you there when it fell to its icy death?
No, I was not there. I was not there.
How long does it have to stay in the rice?
Minimum 24 hours, but we're way over that. I think it's trending in the wrong direction.
Has it been turned on to see if there's any life there?
Won't turn on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Even with the rice. My experience has been rice will fix most anything, but apparently not this.
Your arm's broken. Hold on. Let me go get some Uncle Ben's.
The best phone damage story of which I am personally aware was our youngest daughter's best friend. They were at the swimming pool.
Mm.
And as it often is on swimming pool day, it was hot.
Yeah.
Well, what happens? Your cell phone gets hot. You know how that is. Now, this girl is very smart. She is very smart. This not one of her best days. Because her phone was getting hot, she elected to put it in the pool just to cool it off.
That's not bright.
I think she had it in one of the life-proof cases, but even then, it's just not a good idea. You could put a towel over it. You could put it in the shade.
Yeah.
A lot of options that you could do, but I do not recommend submerging it in the pool because that didn't go well. Well, we're going to have to follow up and see what happens with the rice. This was a good tweet from Jerry Bouchel.
Mm. Congrats, Jerry.
He sent us a picture of Holly Rose, place card at the Kentucky-Kansas basketball game. I watched that game, too, by the way, but I guess they're not in the ACC last time I checked. And he said that it was like the page from Highlights Magazine, because it was like you were trying to find what was wrong. Can you find all the mistakes? And he gave us one. They refer to Vanderbilt head coach Bill Self on this
place. That'd be breaking news.
Yeah. But Highlights Magazine, that was a good throwback. I used to love Highlights Magazine. Did you read that?
Highlights Magazine? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I liked finding the mistakes.
I think that's about all I did on there.
Sometimes there were good cartoons and stuff in there. I like that. So good callback there. Now, LeBron, big pod listener.
Yeah, obviously.
He wanted to weigh in on the Michael Jordan
I'm
versus
I'm thinking
Vince.
About throwing a poll up for this. Do you think we should throw a poll up?
Well, now, I got to make sure everybody understands my position on this. I believe it's entirely possible that Vince Carter is the most talented in-game dunker and or dunker ever. But my opinion is, if you get prime Michael Jordan and prime Vince Carter and say, prime Michael Jordan, we're having a contest with you and Vince Carter, a dunk contest, go. I think he would find a way to win, even if it was by like tying Vince Carter's shoes together. That's why I think he would win. I'm not necessarily saying I think he's better. I just think he would win the contest.
If you don't know what we're talking about last pod, I said I thought prime Vince Carter, I would take him over anyone in a dunk contest. And Adam then said he would take prime Michael Jordan for the reasons that he just eloquently told you.
Right.
And then LeBron kind of randomly came out with some
– well, randomly, except for he listens to the pod.
Said that he felt Vince Carter was the most talented dunker of all time.
Yeah.
Which –
okay, LeBron, what do
you
know?
I went back and watched the 2000 Vince Carter dunk.
Is that where he put his arm in the basket?
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
And he was really good.
Oh, no doubt.
It just reinforced my position.
And, like, of in-game Carolina dunks that I can think of, he probably has, like, six of the top 10 or something. So, no diss to Vince Carter, who just had his 42nd birthday and is still playing in the NBA.
Yep.
And people want to talk about Tom Brady being old. That's fine. He's playing quarterback. Like, you can't even sneeze on him without getting a penalty. Vince Carter is playing NBA basketball at age 42. We need him on the pod.
Going to Atlanta. It's where he plays now.
That's right, where the players play, ATL. Our boy Dante's dog, who, as we know, is a Duke fan, but very reasonable and classy.
Yeah, that's right.
He sent a good link that I had not seen. From WEAR in Pensacola. Woman arrested for dancing naked in Waffle House parking lot. A 38-year-old woman was arrested by deputies after she dropped her pants and blocked traffic at a local Waffle House. The police responded. When the Waffle House employee came to work, the young lady's name is Freedom Rider Zobrist.
Wait. Is Ryder her middle name, or is the first name Freedom Ryder?
No, Freedom, first name, Ryder, middle name, Zobrist, don't think she's related to Ben, last name, was trespassing on the property. And due to her behavior, she was asked to leave the premises. That's reasonable. However, she continued to cause problems and eventually ran from the location, leaving all her belongings behind. The employee stated, what a nice person, he did not want to throw her belongings away. Therefore, he moved them to the back of the establishment so she could pick them up without interrupting anyone. She later returned and declined to leave the property and became verbally abusive. She made a couple threats that were not very nice. She walked to the middle of the parking lot and pulled down her pants, which, as we know, you only do when you're in the ductwork and are trying to sneak into the Waffle House.
Yeah, rookie mistake from Freedom Rider.
And then started dancing around in the parking lot. She then approached the Waffle House employee, attempted to grab him, and licked him on both sides of his face.
That was welcoming.
So when the police arrived, she blocked their car and started dancing, again, no pants, in front of the vehicle. That didn't turn out well for her, and she was indeed arrested. So that's your latest no pants at various restaurant news. Also, this was an important moment. So my wife's in this thing where she's trying to declutter everything because I think
An early spring cleaning.
Well, it's like a new year, new cleaning up thing, and she's done a lot of work. But one thing she uncovered this weekend, which I texted you, I'm going to be a millionaire, because she found what I can only describe, and I did describe to her, as a treasure trove of music.
It's pretty impressive.
It was, you know, did you ever have one of those cassette cases that kind of looks like a briefcase, and you, like, put them in there?
I had them for, I had, like, CD. It kind of like a CD tower a little bit, but I know what you're talking about.
And so I'm just going to read them to you in the order in which they were found. This was like if you had unlocked King Tut's tomb and wanted to present everything exactly as it was found, this is how it was found. Michael Jackson, Thriller. I mean, right in the top left, where it belongs.
Yeah.
Bon Jovi, New Jersey. Mm. Rocky IV, the soundtrack, obviously. Bon Jovi, Slippery When Wet. Michael Jackson, Bad.
I can just imagine little tiny Adam playing his Michael Jackson Bad cassette.
Who's going, bad?
Looking in the mirror, like spinning around.
Bobby Brown, Don't Be Cruel. It's his prerogative.
He didn't follow those guidelines later in his life.
White Lion, Pride.
Mm.
White Snake.
Get it, White Lion, Pride.
Richard Marx.
For when you wanted to get emotional.
Yeah, that's right. You got to bring it down a little bit. DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. He's the DJ. I'm the rapper. Tier 2. Oh, this was a good one. There were a couple mixtapes that I had made in there, recording straight off of probably G105. And you had to be careful because sometimes that darn DJ would talk through the opening of the song and mess up your flow. I didn't like that.
Down on the coast, it was B100. That was our...
Nice. The Police. Striper, the Yellow and Black Attack.
Very well. Not everyone can be a winner.
Don't remember that one as well. Europe, Out of This World. A tape someone had made me of another bad creation.
Oh.
That's got the hit song Aisha on it.
Oh.
Aisha, so lady, glad to meet you.
What young lady made you that tape?
I can't reveal that. I'm trying to decide if I want to keep these for the next generation and pass them down, or if I want to sell them on
eBay. Do you have
eBay.
Anything to play a cassette on?
Yes, I do. In fact, in my office, what I listen to the Tar Heel Sports Network on when I'm turning down the sound has a cassette tape player, which I've never used until today. So, obviously, I did what any normal person would do, and I went straight to eBay to find out exactly how much money I was about to make.
Sure.
I mean, like, Michael Jackson Thriller on cassette has got to be worth a ton, and the answer is yes, about $2.95.
By the time you sell all of those, you may have like $15 and you can go have yourself a nice lunch.
Yeah, but then I'll have to pay shipping and that's going to eat up some of it. The Bon Jovi, one of the Bon Jovis still had the little sticker from the record bar in there. You know, when they would mark like when you bought it in case you wanted to bring it back if you decided that you were not living on a prayer.
Yeah.
And so it had like the date circled, brought back all those memories of going to the record bar and looking over at the CDs and going, oh, one day I'd like to be able to be that technologically advanced.
Nice little trip down memory lane.
Sticking with cassettes.
Nice little trip down memory lane for you.
At the playground, you know. Another bad creation. Whatever happened to those guys? They're 50, that's what.
Whether your favorite seat is courtside or comes with a bird's eye view, head to StubHub, grab 100% verified tickets. You know you'll get in. They've been hooking up fans with amazing seats for more than 17 years. It's the official fan-to-fan ticket marketplace of Carolina Athletics. Brought to you by UNC Healthcare and MyUNC Chart. You can keep track of your health stats at myuncchart.org. Of course, Pinehurst as well. Pinehurst number 4, open in September to rave reviews. Newest must play in the country. Be among the first to play. Visit pinehurst.com. I have a How Can You Justify That, which I'll get to in a minute. That's brought to you by Circle K. You'll find great people serving customers in clean stores and offering all kinds of products at Circle K. And quick reminder also about UNC.edu. See the impact Tar Heels make every day. We were talking about Tar Heel students earlier. Learn more about what's happening at UNC. Visit UNC.edu. Quickly, two things that I wanted to mention. John Pearson sent us an email and was inquiring if we may want to have Freddie Kiger on the podcast. We had mentioned, Freddie, that he was leading the lecture that Adam and I spoke during, the one that was about Woody's career. And we've had – so I responded to John and said, great news. We've had Freddie on before. He was very early in the podcast life. And John went back and found it, and it's February 3rd, 2017. If you have never heard that interview, I would encourage you to go back and listen to it just when you have time. Freddie is an unbelievable – has an unbelievable story, worked with Coach Smith during his days at Carolina, has done Emmy-winning TV production, including doing stuff at the Olympics. He's just a treasure trove of stories, both Carolina and otherwise, and really had a tour. I think we talked to him for more than an hour that day. He was awesome. So February 3rd, 2017, if you want to go back in the archives, I would encourage, if you're a newer listener to the pod, that's a great one. Also, while you're there, there were some really good early interviews. Tyler Hansbrough, Marcus Page, some really good early interviews that we did. So if you haven't heard those may be worth going back and listening to if you are interested in doing it. Had Missy Hamp sent us an email and saying that, long story short, she married a Yankee. She said a legit Yankee, not a Maryland or Ohio or even Florida Yankee. He's from Massachusetts. Said our daughter was even born there as well. In his defense, he's lived in God country for the last 20 years. But she said because of his Massachusetts ties, they are big Patriots fans. She said they're going to be at the Carolina Tech game on Tuesday night. Do we think Bill Belichick might be there? I don't know. Maybe. Super Bowl is this week, Adam. What event's bigger than the Tar Heels and the Jackets tonight in Atlanta? What else could Bill Belichick be doing? I don't know.
Maybe we could get him on the pod.
I'm sure he would love that.
We should just contact Patriots Media Relations.
Yeah. Missy said, regardless, hoping to get an arms cross pick. Of course, come down and see us, Missy. That's easy to do. We're going to be court level tonight in Atlanta and are across from the Tar Heel bench, right, in Atlanta?
You're assuming, yes, Everything's just like it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's assuming. I believe that to be true, though. So come see us down there. We also had one other person, trying to find it here, sent us a tweet.
They tweeted.
Inquiring about coming to see us as well in Atlanta. Daniel Potter. So, yeah, Daniel, come on down. Come down, say hi. No problem at all, and we'll be happy to say hello. We love meeting our friends from the pod. Okay, Adam, I do have a quick how can you justify that before we get out of here.
I do not have to justify.
How can you justify what you've done?
How can you justify sacrificing our love?
How can you possibly justify that?
So this weekend, I realized that the internet, the wireless in the house wasn't working.
Oh, boy.
And so normally what I do is I just go and unplug the machine,
sure, yeah,
plug it back in,
right,
and then like 5 minutes later it's working fine.
Right.
Well, that didn't work either.
Uh-oh.
So I was, I said, okay, no problem. I'm just going to reset the router. Hmm. So I, for a little bit, Adam, I felt like I was like a computer hacker because, yep, I was so skilled at what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I pressed a little button on there, reset the router. I went to the website on the side of the router, found like how to change, you know, rename it, mm-hmm, and then reset the password to what I wanted it to be. I mean, I seriously was like, good gracious, I could co-star with Sandra Bullock in The Net. I'm so good at this. So, man.
And she now pronounces her name just like Reggie. I wasn't even aware of that.
Oh, yeah, Sandra Bullock. Look, hey, once a Tar Heel, always a Tar Heel. So, everything was fine. Everything's fine. Except for, you know, you then have to go through the whole deal of, like, changing the password, yeah, on all the stuff. So, but no big deal.
Right.
It was no big deal. So, we got everybody's passwords changed. Everything was fine. Then it comes up to Sunday night, Adam. And I had a lot going on early in the week. We had the podcast. We had the game coming up. Had Roy Williams Live on Monday night. So I said, I am going to do some work here on Sunday night. The kids have tucked themselves into bed. They're snuggling up with sugar plums dancing through their heads. I am going to do some work. So I needed to print something off. Well, now, wait a second, Adam. We have the wireless printer. Mm. Well, the wireless printer didn't know what had happened with the password. The password was different, and the wireless printer didn't understand this and didn't like it. I swear to you, Adam, I worked on this. I bet it was for 3 hours on Sunday night. And I Googled every combination of, like, changed wireless password, printer won't work. I have Googled that or some combination of that probably 50 times. And so it was maddening to the point where I was like, I started yelling at my wife. I was just angry at everything because it was making me so mad. And so finally, I figure out, I go through the app on my phone somehow, and like you got to press all these different combinations of buttons to make it do all these different things. So I held the wireless down, hit the color button, then I think the wireless button again, and then I had to join the network that the printer has on its own. Like, I don't even, like, why is this so hard, right? So finally I get in there. And I figure it out. I don't know how. I honestly think it was almost just luck that I hit the right combination of buttons and did the right thing. But then I said, oh, wait. Oh, I see how to do it now. I changed, like, I put the name of the network I wanted it to join. I put the new password in there. Boom. So it's working. So then I go to my laptop and I say, okay, discover printer. Because I had to delete the old printer,
right?
Because it was going to get too confused. So I do it, Adam, and it comes up. And I almost felt like taking a lap around the house. Like, it was like the heavens opened up. It was like the angels started singing down on me, and I felt like I was a genius again. Because, Adam, I'm not even joking. I felt like I was, like, trying to crack, like, the Dead Sea Scrolls there for a couple hours. So then the printer comes up. And I'm like, yeah, this is really gonna happen. I'm gonna be able to print off the Georgia Tech stats. It's really gonna happen. And then it says, new drivers needed. And I about took, you know, that scene in Office Space where they take the printer out to the field and they beat it with the bats. That's where I was there, but I kept my cool. I kept my cool, Adam. And see, this is the real confusing thing. I didn't have to do all this the first time. The first time I did this, I just said, like, find printer, and somehow it was already online, and everything worked easy. But so then I had to go download these drivers. But after about 4.5 hours total, I have the capability to wirelessly print again in the comfort of my own home. But so my how can you justify that is, why is this so hard? Why is it so hard? It shouldn't be this hard. And I'm not dumb. But I felt dumb, Adam.
I think it's probably the Russians.
They're in there hacking my printer.
Yeah. I understand better now how the phone ended up in the toilet.
It was not. I had nothing to do with the phone in the toilet.
Did you at any point consider just plugging in the printer? Like just connecting it to
your
computer?
Yeah. But that's not the point. The point is, eventually I'm going to need the wireless option again. So I was already in it. To win it. What was my trademark phrase? If you're in it to win it, you better know the rules. Yeah, that's it. Trademark that. So I was in it to win it at that point, so I wanted to finish the job.
There's nothing more simultaneously empowering and emasculating than when you fix something incredibly difficult,
yeah,
and you're just trying to bask in the glory,
yeah,
and then like your wife or something wants to know how you did it,
yeah,
and you don't really know. All you know is that the outcome was positive.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to go through the details.
Well,
I don't want to diagram it for you on the clipboard. Just know that I fixed it.
So what I'm terrified about now is, like, I know my phone and the laptop,
yeah,
are, but like if my wife wants to print,
yeah,
something off the phone once it dries out in the rice. Yeah. But what if that doesn't work?
Oh, boy.
Like, I feel like it should work because we're all on the same. Everybody's happy again. The printer's on the right thing. But if it doesn't, and then all of a sudden I have to do something again,
well, I think that's on her. Look, you fixed it for you. Look, if yours can't cooperate, then that sounds like something you need to fix.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry about that problem. Probably when you dropped it in the toilet, it messed it all up.
I think
up.
It has something to do with the rice. Why'd you put it in there anyway? Uncle Ben's not going to solve everything.
All right. So we're back later this week. We'll have the recap of tonight's Georgia Tech game. We'll look ahead to match up with Louisville.
Big game.
Yeah, we know what happened the first time. It wasn't positive. And we have an interview with Garrison Brooks. And this is one of the more fun interviews we've done in a long time. It was just fun. Adam and I got to tell you, Garrison is kind of a quiet person. You and I both went into the interview going, okay, Garrison's kind of soft-spoken, just kind of a quiet guy. So just, you know, we were aware of that we may need to ask some more questions or something like that. But he was awesome.
And he was excited about doing it.
Yeah.
From the very beginning.
Yeah.
Which I think you probably by now or by Friday, you'll see in his arms crossed picture. He was really into it.
Yeah.
Really into the questions. He gave us some great information. We now know his childhood nickname.
Yeah.
Which we may or may not start referring to him regularly by. Probably not. So that was a really fun interview.
Just a really candid, fun interview with Garrison on Friday. So I think you're going to really enjoy that for our second show this week. But for now, Adam, a phrase that I'm confident in saying has never been uttered before this moment. So mark it down. We're going to let the Chancellor of University of North Carolina and the RZA send us out on the latest edition of the Carolina.
I'm Chancellor Carol Folk. See you later, Big
when
Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.